Well, today we're going to talk with Alex Sloan, and Alex has been a PGA member since 1960. He was the head professional of Turtle Point Golf Club up in Florence, Alabama, and was there for 33 years. Alex was also in the first authorized instructor class done by Homer Kelly up in Seattle, Washington. And it was Alex and Tom Tomasello and Larry Aspenson and I think a couple of more, but Alex will fill us in on that. But anyway, I'd like for everybody to welcome Alex Sloan. Alex, thanks for being with us tonight.
I'm so happy to be here.
So, Alex, you and Tommy and Larry Aspenson, who else was in that class up in Seattle?
There was supposed to be several more, but no one else showed up.
Is that right?
Yeah, Mr. Kelly was so surprised, but, you know, it was to our benefit, so I'm sorry for them that they weren't there.
I know in the past I have gotten phone calls, emails, people posting on our forum saying that they were in the class with you, and I don't remember their names, but I said, you know what, as far as I know, there was only three there.
That was it.
Yeah. So tell us what got you interested in the golfing machine.
Well, it's a long story. In 1979, Tom Tomasello walked in the golf shop. He was a salesman for Pro Shoe and Hager Slacks and other companies. And he was carrying a little yellow book under his arm. And he came in, you know, Tom, in his outward way of doing things.
Yeah.
He's a likable fella. He said, well, if you give me an order for some merchandise, I'll give you a golf lesson. Well, that was a no-brainer. So we took care of our business and went to the practice field. And he proceeded to give me a lesson from the golfing machine. Well, I was hosting the Dixie Section PGA Championship that fall at Turtle Point. And so I was my first year playing the senior division. So, as you well know, if you're the host for a tournament, you don't have time to practice. You're so busy doing 1,001 little big things and you're ready for tournament.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a couple of bags of practice balls to get ready for that tournament. And when I teed it up, all I thought about was what Tommy told me.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 54 holes, that's all I thought about, and I won the tournament.
Well, you know, and now everybody's going to say, well, what did he tell you to think about? First of all, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah,
you know?
Let me tell you another part of the story, and I'll tell you. A few weeks after that, we were having our chapter tournament down at Stillwater Country Club at Alexander City. So I went down there, and I said, well, it worked for one. They said it works again. So through that tournament, that's all I thought about is what Tommy told me. I won in that tournament. And then a few weeks after that, Bud Burns joined me as my partner in the Pro Senior Division. We went to Yacht Club at North River Yacht Club in Tuscaloosa.
Uh-huh.
And he and I won that tournament. And all I thought about was what Tommy told me.
Uh-huh.
And all he told me was the secret to God. And that's all I said to myself, I'm going to have lag. So for every shot I hit for those three tournaments, that's all I thought about. I'm going to have club head lag.
Uh-huh.
And I won each tournament. What else can I say?
Well, you know, and club head lag, as Mr. Kelly says, is elusive. And you see players out there every day struggling to try to get club head lag.
Oh, no doubt about it. But I had never heard that before.
Uh-huh.
No one ever told me that before. All my years of playing golf, and well, I thought about that, you know, and I thought about a lot, and of course, needless to say now, that's a strong point of my teaching because of my experience in accomplishing that.
Right.
And I had never won anything before in my life. Here I was, three tournaments in a row, thanks to Mr. Kelly.
Amazing what good information will do, isn't it?
Isn't it the truth? Isn't it the truth?
So I know that, you know, after you won those three tournaments, you were probably feeling pretty good, weren't you?
Oh, just absolutely felt wonderful. So then he comes back then in the late summer of 1980 and said, Mr. Kelly's going to hold his first class for authorized instructors. I want you to go to Seattle with me. Well, I thought, from Florence, Alabama to Seattle, Washington, that's too far for a country boy to go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was, at first I told him, no, I can't do that. But he was persistent and kept talking to me. And the more I thought about it and prayed over it, I realized that this was the thing to do. And as it turned out, it was the greatest professional experience of my life. I, you know, it totally turned my life around. and Moyes won, and I've never had a bad experience giving a golf lesson since then.
Right, right.
And it's just unbelievable what you can do now with taking Mr. Keller's information.
Well, and, you know, and that information is taken in a lot of different varying ways, and one of the questions that, you know, that I get quite a bit, and I told you about earlier, was, you know, you would say, you ask somebody about the golf machine back in the early 80s, and they would say, well, you know, go out and see Ben Doyle. So you go out and see Ben, and Ben would teach you his procedure. Then they'd say, go see Tommy. So you go to see Tommy, and Tommy was totally different. And I think it changed dramatically after you guys quit going, doing golf schools. So, you know, one of the thoughts has always been, how can two people go to the same class, hear the same man think, and walk away teaching two totally different procedures?
Well,
you know, and Miss Kelly told me, I asked her one time, I said, who teaches the closest to Homer that you've ever seen? And she said, Alex Sloan.
Well, that's a compliment, and I tried my best to do that. Because Homer told us time and time again, over 10 million, or 10, he said 10 trillion ways to hit the golf ball.
Uh-huh.
And so that in all of my lessons and all my classes, the first thing I try to do is evaluate, is the student a hitter or a swinger?
Uh-huh.
And when I started holding the schools at Turtle Point, the first thing we do is go to the faculty for that very reason, so that I can evaluate, are these people hitters or swingers, or what, you know, what would be their natural way of thinking. But you ask the person up front before working with them, are you a hitter or swinger, and they don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So anyway, then when I start giving lessons, I tell people up front, I said, now we do not know if you are a hitter or a swinger. I start every student out as a swinger,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like the vast majority of golfers today are successful doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell them, now look, if I feel like this is not working and we need to switch horses in the middle of the stream, now don't you think I'm crazy and I didn't know what I was talking about, because I'll explain to you what I'm doing and why, and then we're going to see how it works, because sometimes we have to try several things before we pick up the right way to do it, because there's no more ways to hit a golf ball than our brains to stand on the beach.
Right, right.
And my, as your instructor, that's my toughest job, is to figure out the best way for you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had experiences, and I had my best student, she's about to retire now, as a school teacher, and she's a scratch golfer, and when she started working with me, it's interesting how we got together. I was hosting the ladies' invitational at a turn point.
Mm-hmm.
She comes in after nine holes and crying, I'm shanking the ball, I'm shanking the ball. I give her a 5-minute lesson on how to cure the shank. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, my phone starts ringing, and she starts taking golf lessons from me.
Yeah.
So I start working with her and tell her about the swinging procedures, and she rebelled. She didn't like it at all. I said, well, okay, I didn't say this to her, but in my mind, I said, well, we'll try the hitting procedure.
Uh-huh.
She took to it like, you know, fish takes to water. And just the more we worked on the hitting procedure, the better she got. And she just hit the ball better and better and better. And she said, oh, I'm hitting the ball so good, but after the round, I'm absolutely worn out.
Yeah.
I knew why.
Right.
So she takes lessons from me still, just constantly. And so over the years, without her realizing it, then I started switching her more and more back to swinging to take mm-hmm. the work out of her golf game.
Right.
And then all of a sudden one day she said, well, I'm not near as tired now as I used to be. I wonder why.
Yeah.
And it was a long time before I ever told her.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so many ways that we can accomplish things and do things with the information Mr. Kelly's given. So it's unbelievable. But you just certain, I tell everybody up front when they come to me for golf lessons, there's seven things you have to know and to do. But there's so many ways to do these seven things. But all of your lessons are going to be in perfecting seven things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it boils down to.
And tell everybody what those seven things are, Alex.
Well, the secret of golf is at the head of the list, of course, club head lag. And then your three essentials and three imperatives.
Uh-huh.
So there's your seven things, okay?
Right.
People don't, you know, the average golfer doesn't take into consideration the gross importance of maintaining a steady head and mm-hmm. how to maintain a steady head. Because when we're swinging the club, we're in an arc. We're trying to draw a circle, so to speak. And if we get that club head out of that groove, we're not going to make consistent contact on the ball. And you can't keep the club in the groove to get the club back flush against the ball if your head's moving all over the place.
Right.
So the first thing I look at when I give a golf lesson is people's feet to see what they're doing. And this is the key. When we were sitting in class with Mr. Kelly, we were talking about the various components. And as instructors do when they're teaching, they'll ask the question before answering the question. So he asked the class, what function do the knees play in the golf swing? And I immediately answered, to keep the head still. He froze.
Yeah.
He walked over, made a note on top of the filing cabinet where he kept a big legal pad. He turned to us, he said, now why didn't I say that? And that came out of the next issue of the book.
Right.
And so this is the key, it's to the knees and the feet. And to tell you a little story about that, I went to Memphis one time. I always go to Memphis, used to, don't anymore, when they had the Daddy Tom's Classic over there.
Right.
And I'd go on Tuesday to take pictures. Well, I won't mention names, but there was a good friend of mine who was on the faculty practicing. And it taken him 13 attempts to get his tour card. This was his first tournament after getting his tour card. So when he started to walk off the tee, I turned my back from him so he wouldn't know who was there. And I just made the comment that, boy, these guys in Alabama really know how heavy golf ball. And he turned to see who said that. And he said, hey, he spoke to me. We shook hands. He said, come walk around with me while I play a practice round. I said, fine. I said, who are you playing with? He said, oh, Jim Chancy and Frank Connors and Lee Trevino.
Yeah.
So I had a low 16-millimeter camera I bought from Irv Schloss, who had pioneered teaching with a camera.
Right.
The video cameras. So in that round of golf, I took a picture of every shot that foursome hit that day. When we finished the round of golf, then he found out I was into the golfing machine. He wanted to pick my brain. So we're back on the practice field talking. And so one of the fellows that was playing with came back down and sat there talking to us. And I made this comment. This was strictly an off-the-cuff comment. I said, I can look up and down the tee at these boys who are hitting practice balls right now, and I can tell you who's going to make the cut, who's not going to make the cut. If they make the cut, they're not going to make much money.
Yeah.
He turned to me and said, how in the heck are you going to do that? I said, it's easy. Look at their feet. All these young boys out here on tour, these young boys especially, trying to hit the ball as hard as they can hit it, they got both heels in the air to impact. I said, their days are numbered.
Yeah.
You cannot keep a steady head if you've got that left heel in the air to impact. He turned to me and said, are my heels in the air to impact? And I said, yes. So he went back, started hitting balls, and he came back to two, and he said, you're right, that's why I've been hitting the ball for fitness for a great.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, in the year, he was gone. He lost his card.
Right.
And so in all of my schools, you know, in emphasizing the steady head, it's what we're doing with our feet and our knees and the pivot. So zone one is the foundation of the good golf swing. And
right.
It's so hard to teach zone one because people aren't interested in doing the feet, knees, hips, and shoulders thing. They want to have a golf club in their hand and hit a golf ball. And
well,
that's understandable.
And that's exactly right.
If they do it correctly, or if they're going to hit the ball correctly and do the other things they've got to learn to do.
Well, and if you recall, in the seventh edition notes, Mr. Kelly talked about the tripod, which was keeping the head in the center of the feet the entire stroke.
Yeah.
Which is not in the previous editions.
Right. And so that Irv Schloss, the day I spent with him when I bought the camera, I'll tell you an interesting story. He had been commissioned by the LPGA to take pictures of all the girls because they didn't have any pictures of girls who were successful winners before, when they were just coming along. So they wanted to get the pictures of all the girls starting and then from then on take pictures of them. So as they developed, they'd have the before and after pictures, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on number 3T with a great big professional movie camera, and he had a great big white board as a background and is etched off in squares so that when he took a picture of them, it's just like a graph.
Mm-hmm.
And we stood there until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon taking pictures of the girls. And so interesting how many of them came by and knew him, but it was students of his. So we'd go up to his car. He unlocked it from his car and he was filled with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked up a sequence picture of Jack Nicklaus. He said, I want you to look at this. He said, I cannot explain this. And he had a vertical line down through Jack's posture, an address, and then through all the sequences of the swing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, now look at this. His head is farther behind the ball at impact that it is an address. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, I couldn't answer the question that I can answer the question. It's because Jack had good access to it.
Right.
And your head goes backwards if you have good access to it, you know, in your dog swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural byproduct. And so keeping the head in position and practicing the hula hula move, you know, it's part of the crucial move that people don't want to practice. They don't, can't emphasize the importance of it.
You know, and you and I were talking earlier, I mean, what I like to do is I like to get people to actually stand in front of a mirror or something they can see the reflection in,
and
we go through drills so they can see that. And you were telling me earlier about your classes that you're doing now. Tell everybody about those.
I approached the YMCA about teaching some golf classes for the YMCA, and the director was interested. He said, work up a curriculum for me, let me see it. So I spent several weeks working on a curriculum, and he said I needed 12 weeks for it. I went back to him. I said, I can't do it in 12 weeks. I got to have 14 weeks. And so he said, he looked it over. He said, fine. I said, but I need a room for a mirror. So there was an exercise room upstairs that they lined the walls with mirrors all the way around, ceiling to floor. And so the curriculum was that the first 4 weeks we spent in that room, and I made a little bit of practice clubs. There were no balls involved. And then I was teaching them zone one and the end motion and in that room before we ever went downstairs and put up the portable practice nets and started hitting the plastic practice balls in the gymnasium.
Uh-huh.
So I had a captive audience there practicing, teaching them the flat left wrist, the bent right wrist, the proper position for the right forearm to be on plane, the hula hula move, the posture, the weight position, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, in front of them, they're looking at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that now then, what I've done, my last class, I got the idea and I went out to the practice field and I made a videotape of all the things I taught the students in the class, and I transferred it to a CD, and now then I give them a copy of that so that they can go back and they can play this as many times as they want to, and it gives them all the essential things that I taught them in that class.
Right.
And I've got two thank you notes back from one student.
He's doubly thankful, isn't he?
Yeah. And it was a lady that was interesting. It was a couple that he had had a knee replacement. And his mm-hmm. regular group had just gone off and left him because of his knee problem. So he had nobody to play with. And he's retired. So his wife, who had never played golf, said, I'll take the class with you at the YMCA and see if I can play. She was a wonderful student, and so they go to the driving range at least 5 days a week, even up till now, and he hit balls every morning at 8 o'clock and at our new golf course here in town, and so when she got that videotape, I give them a little certificate like Mr. Kelly did us when we finished our class with him,
mm-hmm.
and I gave her that little CD. I said, okay, you watch this, and everything I've taught you is on this CD.
Mm-hmm.
He said that's the best gift anybody ever gave.
There you go. Now, how long did you, I know you and Tommy did golf schools for a couple of years, but after you quit doing golf schools together, did you guys stay in touch much? Or?
We stayed in touch, but Tommy, you know, you can only give so many schools in a private club where you saturate the market.
Right.
So he wanted me to leave Kirkport and go with him out to the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
Well, that didn't appeal to me at all, because I was pretty embedded in my job.
Right.
And so he went to Santee, South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and then started teaching out there. And then that's, of course, when he talked to Mr. Kelly and lined up 20 golf pros to do a golf school.
Mm-hmm.
And had Mr. Kelly fly in, and we met over in Georgia, and it was the spring educational seminar in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mr. Kelly was the after-dinner speaker. So I was there, and I had talked to Mr. Kelly previously about videotaping his school in Carolinas, and he wasn't excited about having 20 students, because 10 was the most he ever wanted to have in a class.
Right.
Because he didn't think like he could handle 20 people and give them justification and personal attention that they needed. But Tommy assured him that I would be there, and Tommy would be there, and the three of us would have 20 students.
Right.
So I had two students with me. And I had video equipment, and Mr. Kelly said, well, videotaping the class would be great because I'm not going to be around forever, and you'd have this for future schools. So he was excited about the fact that we were going to videotape that class. So we met him in Georgia at the, I forgot where exactly, but then we got there just in time for lunch. We all sat down and had lunch, and Mr. Kelly then was the afternoon speaker. And they had a packed room because there was a record crowd that had come to hear Homer Kelly talk about the golfing machine. Mm-hmm. Well, these pros didn't come to hear Mr. Kelly say anything. They wanted a golf lesson on the golfing machine, and he didn't go to give them a golf lesson. He went to tell them why the system works.
Right.
So for a full hour, that's what he was talking about. Well, toward the end of that first hour, the room was starting to get very fidgety. So the class moderator came to Mr. Kelly and said, Mr. Kelly, we're going to take a break. He said, after the break, they're just dying to ask you questions. He said, that'd be fine. So we took the break, but during that break, he didn't get a break. They were lined up, just and he was just selling books and autographing as fast as Tommy could hand them out. He collected $20 from guys.
Yeah.
And, or whatever it was, they were charging. But anyway, we went back after the break, and the first question that came was, why is the flat left wrist so important? And Mr. Thomas Ellen said, let me answer that. So he started talking and answering that, and Homer dropped dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of it, unfortunately. But he had done his work. He had accomplished what he had gone after. And the fascinating thing, when we were out there with Mr. Kelly, he told us a story about why, how he got into it and why he wrote the book. And he was into writing of the book for 12 years before he ever started, I mean, not for writing the book, but just researching the golf swing. But in 12 years, he said, I've got to get this information to the millions of golfers out there. I can't be selfish. So he said he started working then with the sole purpose of publishing a book on the, what he had developed and learned. And in his words, what he had done was to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Right.
And in his little studio where we were sitting in class with him, the walls were lined with every golf book you can name that's ever been written on the golf swing.
Yeah.
He read all of them and knew all of them, and that's what he had done, research everything. So for the next 28 years, he said, I was 2 weeks away from going to press.
Yeah.
2 weeks away. 28 years.
Got that carriage, huh?
You'd have to research.
Yeah.
And something that just absolutely blew my mind, when he took us out to his little studio where he had golf balls, I walked in that room, my mouth just fell open when I saw what I was looking at. I picked up one of the golf balls off the floor, and it had no dimples on it.
Mm-hmm.
It hit these golf balls so much, they were smooth as ping pong balls.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, you see the tarpaulin behind Diane in the picture where he hit balls into it.
Right.
It was in shreds.
Oh, yeah.
Whole shreds. And Miss Kelly said she'd go to sleep at night, 11 o'clock at night, hearing that thump, 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 hitting balls against that net. And where he would sit on his little platform and pull the balls up, the edge of that was a 2x4, and it was rounded off from the jitting the time of him pulling down, pulling the ball up onto the platform, the driver's mat. I thought about the Grecian temples where the millions of footprints had walked off and just rounded off the steps on the,
right.
on the whatever kind of stone it was. And that's the way this platform looked at Mr. Kelly.
Well, you know, those of us that were lucky enough to ever go in that studio, I think everybody got the same feeling. I can remember the first time I walked into it. I mean, I got goosebumps, you know.
Yes.
I'm going, this is where everything took place, right here.
Oh, it's incredible. Incredible. And then when he gave us a demonstration of swinging an iron head on a string,
of course,
it was carved out of wood, if I recall correctly, and the string went down into the hosel where the shaft would go. He said, now watch the head of that club after the twist gets out of the string. And it was amazing. That head came through in perfect alignment every time, and it opened my eyes to the fact that what the invisible force does.
Yeah.
And I always think about that then as I swing even today, that the invisible force is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let it, you know, your club face alignment, because I was always concerned about the correct rate of club head closing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in, you know, 6B1D, the extensor action, he tells you the third thing in there, it gives you the correct rate of club head closing.
Right.
Along with the working of centrifugal force. He tells you that in 6B3O. So, you know, it's amazing what Mr. Kelly had done. And you know, it's all there. And you know, I could just talk about it for hours.
Right.
It's so exciting when I think about it.
Well, Alex, we've all enjoyed listening and talking. I know you've got tons more information, and we'll do this again, you know, and pick your brain some more.
I'd love to.
You know, Ron's been on the show, and, you know, everybody enjoyed Ron. I know they're going to enjoy you. I want to thank you for taking time out. I know you're busy building airplanes, huh?
I'm working on the third.
There you go. So, but I want to thank you for taking your time out to talk with us. And as always, Alex, it was my pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
All right, talk to you. See ya. This program is brought to you by ChuckEvansGolf.com.